Hey there, guys and gals, all you hip cats, cool kittens, my friends and foes, you diesel-powered disciples of cool. Welcome back to another episode of the Diesel Punk Podcast. I am your host, the comic book loving, time traveling, prophet of pop culture, the voice of Diesel Punk, the Bamboozlist, the artist also known as Big Daddy Cool, John Pica. You can call me Johnny, and I am coming to you live from the Houdini Room here at the Casa de Cool. You guys have heard me talk about it a lot, and now you get to see it live. And every week on the video podcast and on the audio podcast, I'll be reviewing a Diesel Punk book, movie, comic series, and talking about Diesel Punk and pulling things right off my shelf. We're going to go back in time over the next several weeks, and we'll review movies that we've talked about on the podcast. I'll be able to actually show them to you. Maybe we'll realign the video studio so that we can show clips on the monitor on the other side of the studio. It's going to be a big, big change, but I think you guys are going to like it. So if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify right now, you can tune in to the Diesel Punk Podcast video. You can watch it live stream on Facebook on Tuesdays, usually around 10 or 11 a.m., or you can watch the video on YouTube on BDC TV. We have a playlist just for the Diesel Punk Podcast, and you can check that out. So, first up, we got to acknowledge our sponsor, Magic Subscription Box. Magic Subscription Box delivers a magic shop to your mailbox every month. And it is really super cool. If you've ever wanted to learn how to do magic, you can get Magic Subscription Box for about $30 a month. And you get $50 to $60 worth of professional grade magic in that magic box every month. Just go to magicsubscriptionbox.com, use my promo code BDC Magic, and take 50% off your first month. Can you dig that? I knew that you could. All right, let's jump into this week's Diesel Punk news and reviews. Actually, there's not a whole lot of news out there right now. We're waiting with bated breath for the drop of Man in the High Castle Season 4. It will be the final season, and really looking forward to that. In terms of Diesel Punk movies or TV, there's not a whole lot of noise or a whole lot of buzz out there right now. I don't know if there's kind of been a cooling off or if we're just not hearing about some stuff that's coming out. I know that there's some great comics coming out starting in August and September, and we'll talk about them as they are releasing. But this week, I did find another podcast. Now, the Diesel Punk Podcast has prided itself on being the only English podcast that focuses exclusively on Diesel Punk on the internet. There are a few others, Radio Metronomic out of South America. There was a Russian podcast for a while. And of course, our partner at the Fedora Chronicles, first day with my new tongue, Eric Fisk in the Fedora Chronicles does Diesel Punk content, although they are not exclusively Diesel Punk. And of course, he's my co-host frequently on the audio podcast. But the Diesel Punk Podcast is the only exclusive podcast focused on Diesel Punk. But every now and again, I like to do a search on iTunes, on Stitcher, for the search term Diesel Punk. And this week, something new popped up. Something from 2017. And it is a podcast called Blank Punk. And here you can see it, maybe not, on iTunes, Blank Punk. It's from Eve Bretel, and there's only two episodes, although the episodes are labeled episode 2 and 3. Whatever happened to episode 1? We don't know. There are no other episodes past episode 3, but episode 3, the title is Diesel Punk. And the whole concept of their podcast was that they were going to take on these genre punks one at a time and dissect them and discuss them and whatnot. So, you know, I was really super interested in that already to begin with. So I listened to episode 3, the Diesel Punk episode, and I encourage you to go listen, especially if you're a fan of this podcast, just so that you can see how wrong someone can really get it. I'm going to warn you, you want to have a roll of duct tape to duct tape your head together, wrap it around your head, so that when your head explodes, you've got all of the pieces to put back together. It frustrated me because it was obvious from the podcast that Yves Bertel did no research. And I know this for a fact because she did not reach out to me. She did not reach out to Larry Amiet. She did not reach out to Eric Fisk. I can't speak for Tom Wilson. She may have, but they did not quote any articles or any writings from dieselpunks.org, which is the central repository. It is the center spoke of the Diesel Punk community, and yet no references to dieselpunks.org on the episode, no references to anything Tom Wilson has written, anything that Larry Amiet has written, no references to anything that Eric Fisk has written or anything that I've said or broadcast on this podcast, which means she didn't do her homework at all. And that really bugs me. It frustrates me. She quoted two sources for her entire hour-long episode on Diesel Punk. She quoted a Daily Mail or Daily Dot from the UK, and she quoted punkettes.com, which, you know, the Daily Mail article or the Daily Dot article, I'll have to look it up, came out several years ago, and it's okay. It's an adequate treatise to Diesel Punk. But she did her episode in 2017, and she should have known that Diesel Punk has evolved from its origins. And you even know, if you've been listening to the podcast, that Mr. Piecraft himself was on this podcast and agreed with the Cool One, with the Prophet of Pop Culture, with the voice of Diesel Punk, that it had evolved and become less about fuel and more about aesthetics and style. So, Yves Bertel didn't do any of that homework. And she had a co-host that was kind of on point. He was going in the right directions and asking the right questions, but she had the wrong answers. So, for example, she didn't know about the Rocketeer. She had never heard of the Rocketeer. And, you know, the topic of Captain America First Avenger comes up. We consider that a Diesel Punk classic. And she's like, I don't think I would call that Diesel Punk. Really? Why don't you talk to people in the community? Because that is clearly Diesel Punk to the max. And, you know, they kept vacillating back and forth. But the biggest takeaway I had was that Yves Bertel seems to believe that Diesel Punk is all about Nazis. And she seems to believe that we glorify or romanticize the Nazis. And that's absolutely not true. That is absolutely not the truth. Everyone, see, here's the problem. Here's what you need to understand if you're listening. What is Diesel Punk? One, it is a genre, a literary genre that is a mashup of the values and styles of the Diesel era, which is the late 19 teens, like 1918 through 1957. Very short period of time. And we mash up the style, the culture, the aesthetics with contemporary sensibilities. My office is a prime example of that. It's a mix of retro, contemporary, all mashed up. And, you know, I don't have any accoutrements on, but, you know, I play a 1940s ex-gangster turned entertainer. But I wear a lot of rings. I wear, you know, jewelry that a guy in the 40s wouldn't wear. So it's a mashup. So to be Diesel Punk, it's got to have the aesthetics and the style of the era. And that can be visual aesthetics, can be audio aesthetics. That's what we call decodense. It's got to have that decodense. Two, it's got to have some element of science fiction, fantasy, or alt history. And that can manifests in a lot of different ways. It can be future technology. It can be alternate history, like Man in the High Castle. But Man in the High Castle even has the science fiction with the time travel and the dimensional hopping. It can have fantasy. It could be magic tech, like Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, or, you know, Fantastic Beasts. King Kong, think about that. Dinosaurs still alive, giant monsters in 1920s America. That's Diesel Punk to the max. So it's got to have that element of science fiction, fantasy, alt history, something that turns it on its side and makes it not historically accurate. And the third thing it's got to have is punk. And punk is generally regarded as a rejection of the contemporary culture. It is a rejection of the status quo. It is, for me, and this is how I've started to define it, it's anytime a character has to fight and rage against the status quo, rage against tyranny, to fight against an authoritarian power of some sort. And it could be minuscule, like the parents in A Christmas Story, or it could be the very justice system itself, like in Chicago, or like in Inglourious Basterds. It is literally a fight against the fascist regime of Adolf Hitler. So that's the punk, the fighting against a totalitarian, authoritarian hive mind mentality, fighting against tyranny. And again, that comes in big and small ways. And for me, that's what makes something Diesel Punk. And I think Eric can agree with that. Larry Amiot takes a few issues with me on that, but he's starting to come along closer to my thinking. So that's the first thing that they get wrong. They just seem to think that Diesel Punk is about recreating the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and some of the 50s. They seem to believe on this Blank Punk podcast that it's just about reenacting history, and that's completely false. We embrace history, we understand the history, and we incorporate the history, but then we turn the history on its side. Like, for example, in my novel and stage show, Tales from the Flip Side, My love interest is Lana Lamour, who is an Afro-Cuban singer-songwriter, songstress rather, vocalist, from Harlem. Now, in the 1930s and 40s, that would have been a no-no because we had segregation. But in my world, my universe, the flip side universe of Big Daddy Cool, those racial boundaries don't exist. And that's clearly not historically accurate. But it's, you know, it's kind of a, almost like a romanticized, idealized way of looking at the world. You know, if things had gone differently, you know, would we have had segregation and, you know, the need for the civil rights movement? And in my universe, there was none. That never was a challenge. So that's one thing that she gets wrong. You know, they comment in this Blank Punk podcast all the time about how, you know, it's really easy for diesel punks to be racists and homophobes and xenophobes, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. We do not glorify Nazis. As a matter of fact, we have said on this very podcast that if you are into Nazi fetishism, if you are someone who glorifies and exemplifies Nazi thinking, we really don't want you in our community. We do not believe there's a place for that. Now, the co-host on the podcast made a great point, and he said, well, what if someone is at a convention and they are clearly cosplaying as a villain, because the Nazis were villains? And this is, you know, this is where we have said on this podcast that we don't think it's appropriate to cosplay as a Nazi unless it is 100% clear that you are playing the villain. Now, the host of this podcast took issue with, you know, the diesel punk community admiring the fashion and the style of the era. And look, they even, I think they might have quoted me indirectly when they said, yeah, but some people will say, oh, but the Nazis had the best style and the best costumes, the best uniforms. And they're not wrong. That is absolutely true. Hugo Boss designed their uniforms and all of the style of Nazi Germany. And I mean, he made them stylish. You watch Man in the High Castle and you come away wanting to wear that leather coat, that long leather coat that that John Smith, what is his name? Uber Grotenführer? I probably mangled that. Smith wears. Because it's cool looking. Now, you take off the Nazi insignia and you replace it with something else, and now it's not Nazi, it's just cool. It's just badass. And, you know, that's part of diesel punk, is taking elements that you like, taking cool elements, and changing them up, switching them up. And admiring a style of clothing or a cut of clothing does not endorse their philosophy. Did I say that loud enough? Eve, you kind of pissed me off when you insinuated that. And by the way, I've tried to track her down and find her and let her respond. She's a ghost. So I don't know where she is. If anyone knows Eve Bretel, let her know that Johnny is railing on her. And I challenge her to come on the podcast. I know you can't come here and be on video, but we'll patch you in by audio. The other thing that, you know, she tried to insert progressive politics into diesel punk. And one of the great things about Dieselpunk is that we acknowledge our history, but we don't necessarily endorse history as it happened. So we recognize that women's suffrage was a big issue, civil rights. We actually embrace the progress and the progressive elements of society that took place during the diesel era. Those were good things, you know, but she wanted to insert her progressive politics into diesel punk and, you know, kind of poo-poo anyone that's not a liberal progressive. And here's the thing. The majority of diesel punks that Eric and I have surveyed lean conservative or libertarian. You know, we're not progressives. That doesn't mean we hate progressive issues or that we hate those people. It's just that we lean towards, you know, the libertarian side of small government, small taxes, do unto others the way that you would have them do unto you, live and let live. You can't legislate morality, fight against authoritarianism, tyranny, and that's our kind of the majority of the diesel punk community as far as we've been able to tell. But, you know, she goes off on this tangent about Captain America and how Captain America was probably gay because he grew up in a gay section of Brooklyn. And the only way to make money for a frail boy near the docks in Brooklyn was to diddle with the soldiers that came in, the sailors. Eve, that is so far away from the source material. Do your freaking homework. Steve Rogers was always red-blooded, Merkin. He always, and still is. He's also, in the comics, very libertarian. Very libertarian. Because he sleeps around quite a bit. If you read The Avengers or his solo book, he's had relationships with Sharon Carter, Wanda Maximoff, Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow, Diamondback, probably Mockingbird and She-Hulk. And Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp. He's slept with them. He sleeps around. He's a solo, single, white-blooded, you know, apple pie-eating, blue-eyed American, and he is a raging heterosexual. So, you got it wrong again, Eve, and I really wish we could track you down to kind of bring you on and get your perspective after that podcast and after you've done some of your homework, but unfortunately we can't. I'm going to recommend you go listen to it, but again, listen to it with a grain of salt. And I know you guys are probably saying, well, Johnny, you sound like you're defending some of the things that, you know, she railed against. And I'm not. I'm telling you, Dieselpunk is not about Nazi fetish. And it's not about glorifying the Nazis. It is not about inserting progressive politics into our contemporary lives. As a matter of fact, in the Dieselpunk community, we pretty much reject inserting politics into it at all. That's kind of what has killed steampunk. The people on the progressive left have decided that if you don't agree with them, if you aren't liberal enough, you have no place in steampunk. And the people who are creating Dieselpunk, me and Eric and Larry, who, you know, look, Larry is very progressive. And we love Larry, and we don't agree politically, but Larry will agree that politics should not be inserted into Dieselpunk, because as soon as that happens, then it's going to take a downhill slide. The other thing that is important to note is that in Dieselpunk, we don't have overlords. We are not telling people how it should be. We're telling people what we think it is. And yes, we have experts, we have people who, you know, are making the genre, but we don't lord over anyone and say we are the authority. That's not true in steampunk. And Eric Fist just commented on video, should shout out to Nick Oddins for attacking this issue. Yeah, so Nick Oddins has attacked this issue head on with his Never Was magazine. And I recommend you subscribe to that and you read that article. Eric just posted an article to that. So anyway, that's enough of my ranting and raving about Blank Punk. That's my review. There's a reason why it only did 2 episodes and went away, apparently. So, but go take a listen to it. Judge for yourself. And let me know what you think. Excuse me while I indulge in some liquid refreshment. Now, let's talk one of my passions, Dieselpunk comics. So, I love comic books, I love Dieselpunk, so I naturally graduate. First day with my new tongue, folks. I naturally gravitate towards Dieselpunk comics. And so I'm going to show you guys three, count them, essential Dieselpunk comics that you should be reading right now as they're coming out on store shelves. Up first, Bitter Root. Bitter Root is a story about the Sangree family. They are family of monster hunters, generations of monster hunters. But the main story takes place in 1929 Harlem. And I want you to think like Supernatural meets Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow and Indiana Jones. That's kind of the visual aesthetics that this thing gives you. Now, the main series, and here, I'll give you like a sample. There's one of the pinups of the Sangree family. Here's another one of Berg and I think his name is Cullen, squaring off against monsters in Harlem. It's just a fantabulous, fantastic series. The main series is it's written by David Walker and Chuck Brown, and the main artist is Sanford Green. He's the main artist on the series. This issue is the summer special, so you can pick this up right now on comic book store shelves, and it is a collection of several short stories by different creators, all written by David Walker and Chuck Brown, but the artists are different on each one of them. My favorite story is Ladies' Night by, who did this? Ladies' Night was Carrie Randolph and Matt Herms. Carrie Randolph is the artist. And this is a story about the Sangree family character, Blink, and her friend from Chinatown, Wu. So there's some spin-off potential here because Wu is a monster hunter in Chinatown. So lots of cool stuff here. And this, why is this Diesel Punk? Well, you can't get any more Diesel Punk than Monsters Supernatural in 1929 Harlem. And, you know, they use customized mystic weapons, gadgetry, you know, they have that punk aesthetic. And it looks very much visually like steampunk pushed forward to the 20s. So a lot of the steampunk kind of aesthetics overlaid on top of 1920s style and fashion. Very cool. All right, up next, Dick Tracy Forever. And this is by Michael Avon Oeming, and art by, oh, Michael, he does the art too. He writes and does the art. So Dick Tracy Forever. This is phenomenal artwork. It is kind of similar in style to Darwin Cook or Chris Samnee. Very stylized, minimalist in terms of lines and details. He lets the shadows fill in the details. And the concept of this story is it's stories of Dick Tracy in different time periods. So this issue number 3, is in contemporary times. So you've got the aesthetics of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, the gumshoe Dick Tracy comic book character aesthetics, but it's set in contemporary times. So while you have these characters dressed in retro fashion and style, you've got the technology of today, the landscapes and buildings of today. Next issue 4, is Dick Tracy 2031. And we kind of get the idea in this issue, at the end of the issue, that all of these stories may be taking place in his head, because he wakes up in 2031. And so the next issue is going to be the diesel punk aesthetic, the diesel era aesthetic in 2031. Very Blade Runner-ish. And that's what makes this diesel punk. See, diesel punk doesn't have to take place in the era. It just has to maintain the aesthetics and style of the era. And so the artwork, the character designs, all maintain that style and aesthetic. The setting, however, could be different. And this is a great example of diesel punk outside of the diesel era. I have a feeling that next issue is going to be very much a Blade Runner style story. And I love that. It's kind of this Dick Tracy through time periods storyline. Art is fantastic. The writing is fantastic. It's quick paced. It feels like you're reading a movie. And one of the best Dick Tracy series in years. Really, really strong. I highly, highly recommend it. That's my second essential diesel punk comic series that you should be reading right now. Third, number three, Betty Page Unbound. Now, on this cover, I'm going to get heat for showing this cover because she's in the Vampirella outfit. But basically, here's what's going on. Betty Page, at the end of the diesel era, historic diesel era, in the mid-50s, is recruited to be a secret agent for Secret Service and MI6. A la the stories that we've heard about Houdini and some other entertainers, Chuck Barris, if you believe him, and others. But she is, at the end of World War II, recruited, and the stories take place from the end of World War II through the mid-50s. And she goes on secret missions, and her missions always take a turn to the sci-fi side. The first story arc, she, you know, battled a cult that was worshiping aliens, and at the end of the series, they show up. The second series, the second volume, was dealing with the British government trying to utilize the alien technology and the aliens coming back to reclaim it. In this third series, Betty Page Unbound, she is fighting against the Elder Gods. Yes, those Elder Gods. And she has been tossed through a portal that is a multi-dimensional, multi-time, alternate reality timeline. She's bouncing through reality to find these pieces of this necklace that will prevent the rise of the Elder Gods and stop the apocalypse. I mean, it doesn't get much more diesel punk than that. And even in her, in this story where she is, you know, basically a Vampirella analog, they've still maintained the aesthetics of the pulp era. You know, pulp. And pulp heroes were a big part of the diesel punk era. And so they maintain that aesthetic. So those are three on the shelves right now that you should be reading if you're into diesel punk. I'm going to share with you four more titles that, since we're talking about comics, these should be on your bookshelf. These are like the essential collections, the essential graphic novels. Now, this is not a complete list. I will complete the list as we go along. I just want to share a couple with you right now. So, first up, Damned. And this is along the same lines as Bitterroot. They could be a crossover series, actually. The Damned, The Damned, is about a club owner and gangster in Harlem during Prohibition, but the mafia is run by demons, and they're demons who masquerade as human, and only certain people who have the sight can see it. And let me see. I think the character's name here is Tommy. Eddie. His name is Eddie. So Eddie is the main character, and Eddie has the sight, and he also has the ability to come back to life after being killed. If someone touches his dead corpse, they basically trade places with him in hell, and he comes back to life. This is a 3-volume series. Retails for just $9.99 per volume. I mean, and this is a big, thick series. Really fun. And again, love the art style. It's that very crisp noir style. Very minimalistic. You know, uses a lot of... uses the least amount of line work possible. It's written by Cullen Bunn. You may recognize that name. He's done a lot of Diesel era writing. Art by Brian Hurt and Bill Crabtree. Unbelievable. The Damned. I love it. Check it out. Also, this one has gone without a lot of ballyhoo, but we featured it here on the podcast and on the blog a few months ago, the Jekyll Island Chronicles. Now, this is a story about a super team that was formed based out of Jekyll Island and, fighting crime and criminals around the world, preventing the next world war. And you've got the leader of the team has bionic legs. And this really is maybe the most concise, clear example of Dieselpunk out there. And let's see, this is written by Nedviak, art by Crowell and Lowe. I think that's right. Let me make sure I'm getting the credits right here. This is volume 2. Volume 3 is on its way. So you definitely this up. Tesla is the main character. All right, so it's written by Steven Nedvedek, Ed Crowell, and Jack Lowe. It's illustrated by Moses Nestor. So, 3 writers, 1 illustrator. This thing is unbelievably cool. It's a great series. I highly recommend you pick it up. This should be on your bookshelf if you're a Dieselpunk and if you're into Dieselpunk comics. All right, 2 more, real quick, and then we'll wrap up. I want to appreciate you guys for watching the video, and if you like this, make sure you share it and pass it along, post comments down below, and that would be great. So, Five Ghosts. Five Ghosts is one that has been overlooked over and over and over. This is a pulp noir adventure story featuring a character called Fabian Gray. And Fabian Gray is possessed by 5 ghosts, but they're not just any ghosts. See, in this world, literary characters become physical spirits through the collective consciousness of culture. And he's possessed by the literary ghosts of Sherlock Holmes, Merlin, Robin Hood, Dracula, and a samurai that I can never, ever remember the samurai's name. It's a very famous, well-known samurai character, and I completely apologize. But when he can only be possessed by one at a time, and when he is possessed, he takes on the powers and attributes, the abilities of that ghost. So he can be a master samurai, a master detective, wizard, master archer, and of course, vampire. It's very cool. There are 4 volumes of this. 4 volumes of 5... Is it 4 or is it 3? 3. 3 volumes. 3 volumes. I've read the whole thing. I love it a lot. It's written by Frank Barbier, and the artist is Chris Mooneyham. The artwork on this is very stylized art. It reminds me kind of a cross between Bill Sienkiewicz and Carmine Infantino. So if you know those names, you know what I'm talking about. It has that, you know, kind of stylized, painterly style, but this really kinetic action just bursting through every panel. Great read. I highly recommend it. Finally, last one. You've heard me talk about it forever and ever and ever, but I'm finally going to show it to you. Peter Panzerfaust. Peter Panzerfaust is the story of Peter Pan and the Lost Boys during World War II. They are Nazi hunters, and Captain Hook is a Nazi. And this is... I've started this. There are four volumes. So I've read through half of the first volume, and it is just a phenomenal series. Let's see, who are the artists and creators on this? It is written by Curtis Weeb, and the art is done by Tyler Jenkins. And I met Tyler Jenkins at Wizard World a couple of years ago, and he's a great artist, really great. This has more of a very noir pulp style to the art. It's a little bit darker than the traditional Peter Pan mythos, but, you know, it doesn't get any more diesel punk than, you know, Peter Pan fantasy mashed together with World War II, and shocker, the bad guys are the Nazis. Why? Because Nazis are bad guys. Eve? So anyway, Peter Panzerfaust, highly recommended. This should be on your essential diesel punk graphic novels list on your bookshelf. And next episode, we'll talk more about some others. I didn't want to overload us today. So that's it for this episode, the very first live video diesel punk podcast here on Facebook Watch. We'll upload this to YouTube as well and spread the diesel punk gospel. Can you dig that? I knew that you could. And don't forget, visit our website, dieselpunkpodcast.com. Visit our sister site at fedorachronicles.com, dieselpunks.org. If you like the show and you want to support the show financially, we need sponsors. You could be a sponsor for $1 or $2 a month. That's all we're asking. Go to patreon.com/bigdaddycoolshows.com. There's not a .com. patreon.com/bigdaddycoolshows. You can click become a patron there, or at dieselpunkpodcast.com. You can click support the show, become a patron. And we're just looking for $1 or $2 a month. But if every single one of you who is listening right now, if all 10,000 of you would just donate $1, man, what we could do with this show and what we could do to bring Larry and Daisy and Eric all together in one place, boom, would be phenomenal. We could go to every convention and cover it live with just your dollar or $2 a month. Consider that, will ya? Also want to thank our sponsor again, Magic Subscription Box. Check them out at magicsubscriptionbox.com. Use my promo code BDCMAGIC. Take 50% off your first month, and that will be awesome. Well, guys and gals, that is it. We hope you liked the video. If you did, post a comment below or send us a comment at feedback@dieselpunkpodcast.com. And until the next time, swing hard, swing often. We'll catch you on the flip side.